is the time. And get crazy, have some fun. Hello and welcome to the Dad Podcast. I am your host and back by very, very popular demand and mostly because I am deeply, deeply in love. This is the closest that I've come to emotional cheating in the form of a three-way. It's Kyle and Rachel Wright, everybody. They're here.
Hey.
They're here with my...
Oh my God.
My podcast menage a trois, if you here's the thing. I was very, very tired because I did not go to bed until 1 o'clock in the morning before this recording. And this is just the kind of joy that you guys bring to the world around you is that now I'm all fired up. I'm all jacked up. I'm feeling good just to be in your internet presence and I'm not blowing sunshine.
I'm totally blushing.
Oh, you should be, girl. All right.
With you all the time, baby.
So now I'm blushing. Now, Kyle, please, I need some help. I can't handle this. It got too real. Even though I know she was doing a bit, but now I'm sweating in my room here by myself. So here's the thing. I wanted to first get this out of the way because I've mentioned it and alluded to it a little bit. But I've been waiting for literally months to talk to you about this because it was at your behest, I think is the correct word to use in this situation, that I kind of borderline forced the introduction of the sex talk with my older son, Jacob, who is 9 and will be 10 in September. And I have a feeling that both of you, but for sure, Rachel will laugh at this is how it went down.
I want to hear. We're excited.
I'm like literally on the edge of my chair.
I was folding laundry. And Natalie was working in the back house in what is kind of her office now. And Jack was back there watching shows with her. He likes to sit and just be in mom's presence, which is great. And so I'm like, oh, it's just the two older dudes in the house. What better time? And then we were watching a show or something while I was folding laundry and they made some kind of comment about sex. And I was like, oh, even better. Completely organic. Don't have to seem like I'm shoehorning this in there. And I said, hey, Jacob, hit pause real quick. And he hits pause and he goes, what's up? And I said, hey, you knew. And for this part, I want to make sure I was looking at him. I didn't want to like him staring at my back while I folded clothes. So I was like, I said, hey, you know, if you ever have any questions about sex, you can come to your mom and I. Right. And he goes, oh, yeah. Like zero hesitation to a point where I felt like, oh, like, like I was shocked. He was like, oh, yeah. And I said, OK. And then he just hit play on the show again. I was very dissatisfied. This was not after school special enough. I felt like, you know, Scott Baio should have climbed out of my ottoman at some point. And I was like, so then I go, well, hold on. And I said, just so you know, I would much rather your mother and I would much rather that you come and talk to us with any questions that you have than talk to your friends about it. Like, you know what I mean? And he goes, oh, I would never do that. And I said, aww. I go, well, why? I go, why would you not talk to your friends? He goes, because they would run. He goes, if you just say the word sex, they run straight to the principal.
What?
And I said, I was kind of thrown off balance for one reason. Now I'm way overcorrected to their side. Like, what? I had the same reaction Rachel just did. I was like, wait, what? I go, is that a rule? He goes, right? No. He goes, I just know that people are really overprotective about their kids when it comes to sex. So, you know, that's something you talk to your parents about. And I was like, oh.
Oh.
And I said, okay. And so and I go, well, all right. I go, do you have any questions?
I love it. See, you wanted it to be organic and it was.
Yeah. And he goes, no, I'm good. And I said, okay. And he went back to watching his show. And then I said, all right. I go, well, clearly, like, this was my impression of it. Clearly, I think he seems very comfortable in his own skin about it. There was no, like, no avoiding eye contact, no tension in the room, right. Even on my part. Like, even I felt like the only part that I think I may have emitted tension was that I was shocked at actually how at ease he was with the subject, which made me feel very good. And we make a lot, especially when my parents are here. My parents are like love to make sexual jokes. They love to make jokes about, you know, oh, mom and dad need to go have their alone time. And it's funny because it's come up in other, like we watched American Housewife last night with my mother-in-law here. And she there was a joke about handcuffs in the bedroom, and and they did a lot of the thing where it's like, where did you guys get these? Well, your mom needed them for a costume, like is that kind of stuff is what they were doing, and all the adults in the room would laugh, and it's so funny. Jacob never had this in him. He never had any of this. He would laugh because he knew things were funny, but and I never delved deep enough to kind of figure out why. But anyway, Jack though has the questions, and so he asked it at this moment. He was like, "Why is that funny?" And so I was sitting there and I'm like, here's the thing. If there's one talent my mother-in-law has, it's to make things weird. Like, she really is good at it.
It's your superpower. Right. I make shit weird.
Yeah. I love how that's the talent.
It is. She does have a superpower. And if I could find a weakness to weaken that power, I absolutely would. And the only one I found is just to just blunt straight talk with her. It really shuts her down. She doesn't know how to deal with it. But anyway, so I was like, not the time. Not the time to bring it up because she's going to make it weird in some way, shape, or form. And I just don't want that to be the case. So, but at some point, weirdly enough, I don't know if you guys understand it, but they are two different people. And so even though I had to force the conversation on my 9-year-old, evidently the 6-year-old is ready and willing and ready to receive information and has curiosity about the subject and stuff like that. So that's where I am. My new game plan with Jacob is after his 10th birthday. I don't know why I chose 10th. I guess just to figure to give him some time to where it happens on his terms. But if I don't from 10, I'll probably wait till about October. I'll give him a month to be 10. I don't know where this is coming from in my head. I'm making fun of myself right now. But I figure, you know, a month
is gonna, easier then.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin him turning 10. You know what I mean? So he can enjoy being 10 for 30 days. And then I'm going to force him into adulthood by talking to him about how sex happens and works. This is normal parenting minding, right?
It.
Isn't this great?
I like how you're planning it out.
Right? That's just how I work. That's how I roll, man. So thoughts? How do you think I did? What are your thoughts?
I think you did great.
Yeah?
I think you were way overthinking it before.
What? And that doesn't sound like me.
No, not at all. Not something you do. Not your superpower in any way.
How dare you turn my bit on me?
I think you fucking killed it, man. Seriously. Right. Like, you didn't push it too far, but you pushed just enough because kids are going to be uncomfortable. So, like, you went that one step further to be like, okay, but seriously, do you have any questions?
Yeah.
Like, you could have just left it, but you pushed it just enough for him to be like, no, I don't. And cool, now we don't have to talk about it right now.
Mm-hmm. And partially for me, I wanted to see that when I leaned in, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, mm-hmm. I wanted to see if was he avoiding me because he wanted to watch this show? And he just didn't, you know what I mean? Like, I just wanted to poke a little bit. And then what was funny about it was that I was ready to drop some knowledge. I was ready to have a good, I was going to sit him on my knee. I don't, you know, what I walked away from it as a parent, and maybe a lot of you guys listening can relate to this, is that there's a part of me that's like, what if he knows more than I do? Like, you know, and they're like, that's what I walked away with. Like, somehow I came away with this with baggage. Not a lot. If it was a lot, I would have sat down and said, well, what do you know or whatever. But I plan at some point, like I said, after he turns 10, we'll find a day where he and I'll go out and go hang out somewhere and just and have a chat. Like, to say, hey, so I want to explain to you what this is and then get an idea of what he knows and what his if he has any interests or questions or anything like that. And go from there.
You know, what I love what you're doing, too, is really looking at your kids as who they are and as separate entities, because I think so often, like, I know I get the question a lot, like, what age is appropriate to do X, or like, how should we do this with our kids? And I love that you're separating both of them, because while they're different ages, and that's obviously like the biggest differentiator, they're really different in personality. And I think that that's something that so often parents forget it, even though we know it so deeply, like, well, yeah, of course my kids are different. A lot of parents will forget that when they go to have the talk, and they just think that it's about having, like, doing it correctly. And I'm using air quotes, because there really is no correct way. I mean, there are ways that are better than other ways, but you know your kid best. And because you have that relationship with them, you're able to say, okay, for, you know, kid number one, this approach is going to be better. And for kid number two, this approach is going to be better. And it's just a great example of really taking into account the differences. And I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you actually have said this before when we talked about this probably early on. And I always liked it, is that you referenced it to not being so much a talk as it is a conversation, that it's not just like a one and done type situation, that you should plan to just kind of meet their curiosity mixed with a level of preparedness too. Like that's why I feel like at 10, like Dr. J, our pediatrician, he talks about dealing with BO, with pubescent kids. He said, you know what I found is the best way to do it is that when they're 10, a couple years before it even hits, I just tell them, start putting on deodorant, because a 10-year-old, for whatever reason, thinks it's cool and adult-like, right? He goes, and then you never have to have the awkward conversation with the 13-year-old going, dude, you stink. Put some body, some deodorant on. And he goes, and I don't know why, but 13-year-olds seem to be resilient or resistant to it. And he said, but if you started at 10, and so that's kind of like, well, I'll have it at 10, because then he at least knows that the door is open, and I want him to come to me with any questions, any concerns, anything, and I'm here for him. When he starts to get into relationships and stuff like that. I know he's had little crushes and everything, but he's very much like his father. He's very much a feeler, an emotional person, and he's not as sexual, I think, at this age. That's my impression.
Well, I think using the deodorant thing as an example is a great idea of kind of getting that conversation started and sort of getting there early, because I think the reason that it doesn't work on 13-year-olds is by then they know if they can find a way of bothering people, they'll like go after it.
Especially
like,
their parents.
Oh, yeah, especially. Like, hold on. I'm smelly. And while that doesn't directly bother me, that seems to have an effect on others. So I'm gonna go after that. I think that's a really common kid thing to do. But when you can like kind of brainwash them under the way of like deodorant is cool, they're like, oh, I want to also be cool. I mean, it's the same fucked up logic that had me at 20 years old being like, oh, adults drink gin, so I want to drink gin. Let me drink half a bottle of Bombay Sapphire in like 2 hours and see what happens. But it's that same, like, you got to get there early to make sure that they know, like, what habits to do. And obviously my example's poor, but the deodorant thing works pretty well.
I like that you nailed it. I like that I'm talking to two people without kids, but I really think you nailed the idea of the BO thing is kind of like a jab back at you. And it's very Machiavellian, like, because wouldn't really think of it as a jab. And maybe even consciously it's not, but subconsciously that little teen amygdala in their heads is like,
totally.
It's like, oh, take this, asshole.
Exactly. You're like, I'm smelly. Cool. Here's my fucking armpit. Smell it, dad.
I had another question about this before we move on, is that I've been kind of baffled, and it's something when I actually have the quote unquote talk with him that I want to ask him is kind of say, you know, do you think that there's a reason why you don't have a ton of questions, or maybe like and hint to him, say, it's not a bad thing that you're not into this or don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. I don't want you to think that that is in any way abnormal, or that you should be thinking about it, or if you start thinking about it next year, that makes you abnormal. It's all normal. Like, it's all normal stuff. And if you have any concerns about whether or not something is normal, come talk to me or your mom. Like, that's kind of my plan to approach it. But I'm curious to see, is it possible that there's a reason why he doesn't have a lot of curiosity, that his mom and I are so affectionate around each other, and he has grown up in a house where sexual type jokes, although they're not very explicit. It's not like my mom makes a joke at the dinner table of like, man, you really railed her doggy style last night. It's nothing like that. It's that there's lots of jokes of like if I'm giving Natalie a kiss in the kitchen while we're making dinner or something, it's that, uh-oh, you might be having another brother, sister or something. Do you need us to take the kids? Like, it's that kind of stuff. And at first thought, you would think, well, you're kind of foisting that upon the kid. But in my opinion, looking at Jacob, what I think is that it actually set the table. It was an unintended consequence. We just were ourselves, right? That's all we were doing. And that we unintentionally set the table for him to kind of be cool with being affectionate and people kissing and hugging. And maybe he's like, yeah, sex happens. And it also seems to be very comfortable with the fact that he's not too curious or worried about it at this point.
Totally. And I think, too, like, just going into that conversation with, you know, we're all curious about sex at different points in our lives, more so than others. So whether you're 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, we're going to go through periods where we're more curious about sex and when we're not as curious about sex. And the same goes for kids and teens. You know, there's this stereotype and generalization, especially around young boys, that like sex, you know, is on their mind from the time that they, you know, start touching their penis, which, by the way, is like as a baby.
Oh, yeah.
So that, yeah.
Natalie used to laugh at me because I'd be changing their diapers and they weren't even one. And they, you could tell it was about, I remember, I want to say 5 or 6 months is when they kind of find it. And yeah, they do a lot of guitar playing with it. And so anytime I was changing their diaper, and they started playing it, I would just kind of sit there and I would either check my phone or look, or like just kind of look at the TV or something like that until I felt like they were done. And Natalie goes, what are you doing just standing there? Are you all right? I said, yeah, he's fiddling with it or whatever. And she goes, you're just going to let him sit there and play with it? I said, well, yeah.
Yeah.
And she goes, why not? I said, well, because it probably feels good. And at this point in his life, he doesn't have a lot of say in stuff. So, I mean, I go, I don't really have anywhere to be right now. So if he can hang out and kind of get to know it, who cares?
Exactly. And it's super normal, right? And then like there are phases where they're not as curious. It's the same thing as being, you know, they're obsessed with Star Wars this month. And then the next month they have zero interest. And you're like, well, wait a minute, we just bought you like all this Darth Vader shit. And then like 2 months later, they're like, no, I'm obsessed again. So curiosity is normal to go, you know, wax and wane. And I think even presenting it like that, like, hey, if you're not as curious about it right now, that's cool. Like you said, you know, there will be a time when you are, and then there's going to be other times where you're not. And that's all normal. And so here's what to do at this age when you're curious versus that's a totally different conversation once they're, you know, out of the house, et cetera, et cetera.
Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about, we could do one of two things. We could talk about what you guys have going on at Wright Wellness Center. But also Kyle has this great thing too, where he's kind of talking about and defining, exploring, however you want to say it, what is the quote unquote new masculine man? Like how do we go at that? Which would you guys rather talk about next? I'm going to throw it out to you.
All of it.
All of it. All of that and more after these messages. This is one talented son of a bitch.
For oh my real. God,
Bruno Mars, he is outstanding. I always wonder, because as a guy who has made my money in comedy, and I don't know if it's because you're a comedian, you kind of struggle with self-loathing, right? Can you imagine though? Just because it has to be the case. I'm sure there are singers, obviously, who struggle with self-loathing. That I'm not arguing. But can you imagine someone like a Bruno Mars? Who's just sitting there going, ah, oh, guys, I don't know if I have it. Like, I just.
Right?
I know what you mean. I couldn't really imagine Bruno Mars sitting on the couch and just being like, you know, I just don't feel like being awesome and having a great day today. Like, I just feel like he's a very overly positive person. I imagine that he's got his own situation. I mean, everyone does, but it's really hard to imagine Bruno Mars like sitting on the couch in sweatpants eating ice cream.
Yeah. Going to IP.
Except for he has a whole song about that.
Does he?
Oh, yeah. He's lazy.
Yeah.
I like the idea of him eating ice cream going, I peaked at Uptown Funk. I'm telling you, all this other stuff. I'm just riding the wave. And that was
is riding that wave. That song is so good.
It's
at the
great.
Same time, you got to be a little bit, but like, you know, I peaked with a song that, you know, is kind of a throwback to the 80s. I guess he's still peaking in the 80s, but, you know, that's not a bad time to peak in.
I like the idea, though, too, that in my mind, this is what I'm going to walk away from this conversation with, that Bruno Mars, when he's left by himself and all of the groupies and the honeys and everything, I don't know if he's married. I'm sorry, Bruno. I know he listens. And, Is that when he goes back, sure, I can sing, I can dance, I've got money in the bank, I've got a successful career, but I'm just not funny. There's some part of his performance that he still feels like he's missing.
Probably.
Or like something that he's just really not good at. Like maybe he just can't cook or like can't even like assemble a sandwich properly. Yeah. Like what's your flaw, Bruno Mars?
He's at home. He's at home trying to poach an egg, just cursing. Motherfucker! Damn it! Too long, Bruno! Too long! Get it together, you asshole! Oh, that's funny. All right. So what kind of things are going on? I mean, it's been a few months since we've had a chance to get together. What's going on at the Wright Wellness Center?
Oh, my God. So much.
I believe
so many things, Justin. It's insane. So first and foremost, our business has grown. You know, it's weird to talk about it in business terms because for us, it's really the amount of people we get to help.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for other businesses, that's like customer base or revenue or these words that are so businessy. And for us, like, yes, that's important because we need to eat. But really, it's the lives that we get to affect. Like,
yeah.
And that's how we both mm-hmm. see it. And over the last, I would say, what month is it? May?
Yeah.
So in the last 4 months, I would say we have almost doubled the amount of people that we're getting to serve. And that's just fucking incredible. And it feels so, so good.
It is great because you guys, we've talked about this before, but you guys are both living in not only, I think, a great time for this, but you also are great at it, is that you really are, you're living your passion. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I know that there are struggles and it comes with strife. But I think when you get to do this, that you get those moments of reward. You get those, you know, emails like what I get. Like for me and this podcast, it's every time I get a Facebook message, a tweet or something like, you know, the show made me feel better because I was feeling bad about myself being a parent, or you just make me laugh. Mm-hmm. Or every time I hear you laugh, I laugh, like that kind of stuff. It recharges your batteries. It makes you feel alive more than $200 ever could, as silly as that sounds.
Oh, 100%.
It absolutely does. And that's, I think, one thing that we've been really focusing on is being able to get out in front of more people. And instead of, you know, saying something to one room of people, we want to be able to shout it to like a huge auditorium of people. We really want to amplify our message and what we're all about at Wright Wellness Center and the two of us to really exponentially.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we've been finding, and Justin, I would love to get your take on this because we've talked kind of about this, but not directly about it, is that as we've been working with more and more people, you know, our big message is that nobody teaches us how to be in relationship.
It's true.
Nobody teaches us how to communicate about mental health or money or sex or these things that we deal with like almost on a daily basis. And the research is out there to tell us how to best do these things, but it's hidden behind this wall of you have to have a master's degree, you have to have a PhD to even understand these studies and like how to kind of translate that into like, but what does this mean for my life?
Yeah, you could find the research in a public, you know, published medical journal, but you might as well try and read a congressional act and understand it at the same time.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And so the message that we have been, like Kyle was saying, like shouting from the rooftops is that this is not a flaw in human beings. This is a societal flaw.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is a cultural issue because we, you know, when a couple will come in, for example, and we'll start working with them. And what we hear a lot is, well, my partner doesn't do this or my partner does that. And it's like, oh, okay, well, where did you guys both go to learn how to do that? Oh, nowhere? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like, what are you failing? You never right. were shown how to do this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
We just get so excited. So really, like, removing that blame and guilt that we all carry around, like, the shame of, oh, I don't know how to do this, or I don't know how to communicate my sexual desires, or I don't even know what the fuck my sexual desires are because I grew up in a society where they shamed, you know, sexual self-discovery. Like, name it under the umbrellas of mental health, relationships, and sex, and it's something that we quote unquote shouldn't talk about, at least when we were growing up, and I know before our generation too. And so that's our big message, is like talking and bringing education about things that quote unquote shouldn't be talked about to people because we need to fucking talk about them, just like you talked with Jacob.
Well, and it's funny because you've enlightened me many times in our interactions with each other. But the most recent one was when you suggested to the listenership the book She Comes First.
Yeah.
And so I checked that out, and oh my God, I feel like we should take To Kill a Mockingbird although it would be very dangerous, I would imagine, on some levels to a lot of people. But we take To Kill a Mockingbird out of the high school curriculum, and we make everybody read She Comes First. Because I really feel, and here's the thing, ladies that are listening, before you get uptight about high schoolers knowing this, let's also think about the ramifications. You know what I mean? Let's think right. down the road of what really is the downside for a group of guys having a better understanding of how to please a woman sexually. Like, just out of the box. And it is, and here's the thing. So I read that book and I learned a lot from it. And I would definitely qualify myself as a, and I'm not saying this to backpedal, but I'm saying it to, as because it's true. I would qualify myself as a guy who has a healthy sex life. Like, both yeah. my wife and I are very comfortable with our intimacy, and you know, we have sex as often as we feel like we should, and we're not worried.
What was that S word that you used?
I know. I'm sorry. You know what's funny is that I wish you knew how many times I say the word should, and in my head, like it's an inappropriate joke. I go like it's so stupid, but it's true. But it, you know, I still have, if there was one thing I would think about that in my marriage that I want to work on, is that there is this element where, and I was thinking about this because I knew I was going to be talking to you guys eventually, is that even after I read that book, right, and it's like, whoa, this is awesome, this is incredible for both of us, right? Mm-hmm. Then there's this element, though, where you always wonder, like, I hope I'm doing everything great, right? And I want to know, is there something else? Like, what if it, when I'm doing this, she doesn't like it, or it's yes. like, she's like, oh, he's doing that thing, or you know what I mean? Like, it kind of takes her out of it. Like, you, I think everybody kind of wrestles, or I hope everybody, otherwise it's just me, which is also funny, but, you wrestles with that insecurity kind of in the moment. And I sit, and every time I do that, you guys kind of pop into my head. It's like, well, have you talked to her about this? And here's the thing that it's not that I'm against talking to her about it, but there is an element where what I want to do is I want to be able to bring it to the table and have it be natural, which is an unrealistic expectation. You know what I mean? Like, I want to know what she wants without having to be told what she wants. And I think
you're an awesome guy, first of all.
Well, right. And I think
your intentions there are very good.
Right. I get that part, but I think, doesn't it all stem back to what you're talking about? It stems back to we have these expectations of ourselves of wanting to do these things in unreasonable circumstances and with unreasonable resources. There is no, mm-hmm. especially when it comes to sex. I mean, sure, I could sit there and talk about how affectionate my wife and I are in front of our kids so that they can grow up going, oh, it's okay to be super affectionate or whatever. And weirdly enough, this also just came to my mind, is that I always kissed my dad on the lips until I was like 20. And just because, since they were babies, I never really kissed my kids on the lips because they were mostly drooling when they were babies. And what's kind of come out of that is that they always kind of give me the top of the head or the side of the head or whatever. I don't think I've kissed Jack on the lips once because he asked me to when he was like two. But it's not uptight. It's not weird. I don't also feel the strong desire to kiss them on the lips, but I do think of that. And what I do to compensate for it is I give multiple kisses all over the face. Like, I do a lot of that. In moments where I go, I love you guys. I'm so glad you're here. And it was a great day. That kind of, you know, vibe stuff. But now let's get back to, let's jump back to me talking about sex life as an adult. But I think I can have all of that, but I don't really have a model of, you know, pleasing a woman or interacting passionately. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially when you start to introduce kids into the situation, that unfairly gets heightened. Your sex life really gets a strain put on it, because your intimacy is strained, because you're splitting focus and trying to take care of these kids, and the consequence of that is that you try to put more pressure on it. Well, if I got her lingerie, which I've done and it's fun and everything is great with that, but I wasn't necessarily getting her lingerie to try and save my marriage. But I do think that sometimes people can get moved to that, right?
Well, right. I think that we fall back on kind of what we think our partner is going to really like.
Right. Yeah.
I think at a certain point, be it, you know, and it's almost a natural thing for human beings to want to get comfortable and then not change anything, because we like putting things in boxes and we don't like having to update our understanding of something, just because it's human nature to want to get, like, you know, learn something once and never have to learn it again.
Yes.
I also think that's a...
And then wonder why your relationship gets in a rut, right? Like,
well, no, exactly. Right. I think that also, that really, I think, comes from the way our education system's built, because kids are, we all grow up thinking that if we can just answer questions on a test to get past that class, we'll never have to go back to it again.
It's a really good point, Kyle.
I mean, what you're doing is you get to take like a refresher quiz on your partner, like whenever you want to, really.
Yeah.
To kind of go update yourself. But I think it's really common to want to fall back to like more of the societal norms of how to connect by, like you said, buying lingerie, like doing something what you perceive would be something your partner would like without asking them. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, your wife obviously didn't like, you know, gifts of lingerie. That's great, actually. But
well, I got it. Technically, I started doing a thing. It was kind of part of, here's the thing. Let me give you my example in life. And then you guys kind of hit me with this because I'm really interested in this idea of us being insecure about fixing our own problems when we really don't know how to. We're not taught to. We don't really know how to find the resources to because they can be confusing. Unless, of course, you go to Right Wellness Center and then you can take a webinar. And I'm not saying that just as a shameless plug, but realistically, this is the underlying tone of what you guys are doing. It's not just about sex. But it's not about sex, right? That's not an off
100%. Our three pillars, as we call them, are sex, relationships, and mental health.
Right.
And like, for example, this month, May and June, we're focusing all around relationships. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in relationships, sex comes up, right? So like, even when the focus is relationships, we're still kind of talking about sex. And right. Same thing with mental health. Like,
well, it's when you're talking about sex, what we're talking about really is your relationship.
Right.
Right.
Yes, because what's nice, those are very connected. That's why they're a triangle, because if you really look at it as far as like holding your overall life together, is that if one of those connections is lacking, it really starts to, it's like having a bad hip, I imagine, in that my mom had to have a bad knee, right? Her knee. And so because she was compensating for that knee, she messed up her other knee. And so then she had a knee replacement on the one knee, and then the other knee was so messed up she had to have a knee replacement. Well, then when she was compensating for both her knees, she had to have her hips replaced. You know what I mean? The same, and it was the same kind of situation. So if one of those is lacking, it puts a strain on the others and they kind of fall to the side, right?
100%. And then combine in the fact that we, like you said, have no education around all three of those as it comes to being an adult.
Right.
Right. Well, and we have this weird societal impression that doing work on any one of those areas is considered a weakness.
Oh,
yeah.
God, insane. Yeah.
So, like, how many – this is what drives me crazy is that around Valentine's Day, all these, like, bullshit date ideas and things you can do start coming out of the woodwork, and every company's got a program, and do this to reconnect or do this to reinvent. Go take a cooking class together. Go learn how to do this. Do that painting, wine, whatever, which actually, to be honest, sounds really fun. But there's all these things where it's like, go learn something, go have a shared experience together.
Sorry, I really love that moment. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I to be fair, we have talked about doing the wine painting thing for like 2 years now. We just haven't gotten around to it. But there's so many things that we're told to go do for our relationship that it's like a learning experience together, right? It's like, go learn how to paint while drinking. Go learn how to cook something new together. Go take a sushi class or whatever. Go take like a ropes class or something.
What I like, here's what I like about what you're saying is that seems to be, because if here's the thing, if I try to sit down even tomorrow, right? Like if tomorrow I'm going to sit down and I want to borderline interrogate my wife about what she likes sexually, or I just want to reconnect and say, this is the things I'm stressed about or whatever. Right. That could be a lot in a short amount of time. And even for a couple like my wife and I, who are very fortunate enough to get to talk and communicate on a somewhat regular basis. I mean, life happens but we do make time for each other, right? But if you're in one of those valleys of marriage, you know, we always talk about there are peaks and valleys. And if you're in a valley in a low spot, I think as silly and cliche as it might sound, getting out of the house, doing something external, like taking a cooking class or wine and painting, even if it's something that one of you isn't into, but the other one is, and you can kind of muster through, but just do something together, right? That you can go away. It doesn't even have to cost money. Like you could literally just hang out at a Taco Bell. And I think if you just start to do that small step, don't you think that you'll also find that it'll start to open the door to kind of help you feel better about the bigger things?
Well, that's my thing though, is that, you know, during a short time of the year, during February, we're told that going and doing those new learning experiences, like what you should be doing, you should go reconnect or whatever. There's no reason we don't need to do things like that for our relationship in every other month, at every other time of life. And doing that kind of work on your relationship rather than going and doing something together that's external is so important, and yet we give this like we kind of give it like a slight in our society. It's like, oh no, they have to go to couples counseling. They're trying to work on their marriage. Like, why does that have the societal impression of a negative thing?
Yeah, when during you always Valentine's have to go, oh, poor things. Yeah. Hey, make a note, because I'd be curious at some point when we talk about the new masculine man, is that, because I think a lot about the dads that listen to this show whenever we talk about this subject, and go, because I hear moms, because I hang around with a lot of moms, that they get frustrated by the fact that the only time you get romantic is around February. And I would be curious to get your take on that, Kyle, to see, well, why is that? Why is it that maybe it's a more old school, or for whatever reason, a dude is kind of like, well, on Valentine's Day, this is what I do, but I don't necessarily do it the rest of the year. And this is why I bring this up, and what I said before, where I want to pitch this out, is that I noticed before, my wife was kind of self-conscious about her looks after having kids. And I've talked about it multiple times, even in my stand-up. I made fun of this idea. And I said in my stand-up, I said, I don't bring this up because I think it's funny to make fun of women and their body issues. What I honestly did, this is the closest I came to, in my opinion, to getting kind of heavy-handed with my stand-up material, was that I think it needs to be said in a public forum, because I noticed that women don't listen to the guy. Like, you could say, no, you don't understand. You're hot. I don't care if your boobs are sagging. I don't care if you've got stretch marks. I'm on board. And that just kind of bounces off of them a lot of ways. And so I was doing that, and I felt like my message wasn't getting across. And so my first step was, as I've said before, I kind of turned off the gentleman brain. And if I was there with my wife in the house, I would let the monkey brain fly, and I would say, you know, that shirt, that's a good shirt for your boobs, or that's your jeans, that really look, your ass looks amazing in that, or your legs. I would come in and jokingly find any excuse I can to come in and say hi when she was in the shower, just so I could, because it would genuinely and sincerely distract me, and then I could see that she got a little kick out of it. And then the next thing, a friend of mine recommended the Yandy.com. I tried to get him as a sponsor on the show because I love their stuff so much. But if I haven't mentioned it enough, it's a cheap, borderline kind of slutty lingerie place. Mm-hmm. And what's great about it is that you could pay $20 on something that I think looks pretty nice and is pretty slutty, but you don't like, and you can wear it once and then throw it away because it's like $15-$20. And that's kind of the gist. Right. Or you could tear it up or whatever. And they have stuff, they literally have stuff where you can wrap your wife up like a bow and just unwrap her like she's Alexis on Christmas. And I think, and so what I started doing was I would just find this stuff and I would buy it for her. And then the way it started was one day, I think we were actually on the road or something, visiting family. I can't remember. We were at a hotel and the kids were staying with my parents. And so she does a thing where she would go in the bathroom and she puts her pajamas out. And so I just panty raided her like it was meatballs. I just went in there and I grabbed her pajamas and I replaced it with that stuff. And I kind of, and here's the thing. I'd be lying if I didn't worry that a part of me was like, when she sees it, that she goes, oh fuck, this guy, I'm so tired. This son of a bitch. It's like, Jesus, I'm more than just a piece of meat. But what actually ended up happening was, I think she thought it was cute. Like, she came out and she was, yeah, and she was wearing it. She goes, yeah, she goes, this is weird. Like, and I go, what's up? She goes, I don't know. I came out of the bathroom and this was in place of my pajamas. I go, really? I go, that is super weird, but it looks really good on you. You should wear those instead of pajamas, I would say every night. I think you could literally pull that off. She goes, really? Every night? I feel like I wouldn't get much sleep. And so now we're playfully flirting and joking with each, yes, other. Like, it kind of opened the door. And obviously, yeah, one thing led to another and it was great. And so I want to get your thoughts, because there's that. Why is it that I can easily see that and I can come up with a system or a process and I don't feel like I'm being like cliche or weird in any way, shape or form? But it's a different thing for me to want to sit down with my wife and go, what turns you on? Not even just in the sack. Like, sometimes, like I've talked to you guys about this before, where it's like, when I would mow the lawn, she would go, man, it's hot to watch, mm-hmm, you. You know what I mean? Like, doing the manly things. But now we have a gardener. And I'm like, am I ruining my intimacy in my relationship by paying this guy $90 to mow my lawn?
I'm not going to put you on blast now.
Do it.
No, I will. I will.
Oh, okay. Just in 30 seconds is what you're saying?
Yeah. You know I will. You know I don't shy away from that.
All right, good.
So here's the thing is with the lingerie example, which is super sweet, by the way, and I think it's really cute because that's the type of relationship you guys have.
Yeah.
So, you know, for men listening, like, not all women are going to be okay with what Justin just explained.
It's true.
Have that know your audience, right? Like know your partner, know what she likes and doesn't like. If putting out something like that is going to cause pressure and cause conflict, then don't do it. And like have a conversation before.
I think I need to make it clear is that I laid a lot of groundwork kind of leading up to that in talking about how sexy she was and how attractive he was. Because, right, if I would have opened with that when she's feeling self-conscious about her body, knowing what I know about my wife, that would be the last thing that she would want to wear. And I'm sure there are moms right now listening to Rachel going, thank God, because that's the furthest thing from my mind. And you have to really work on that triangle within your relationship of, you know, relationships, mental health. I think the example that would touch that is that, you know, there's self-consciousness. Like you got to you got to kind of help be there to support them with that before the other two can work out.
100%. Yeah. And the anxiety that can creep in, like it's just it's dominoes that can start. So I love the example. I just wanted to put in that caveat.
No, you're good.
But to answer your question, I think the reason why it's easier to do that is because that's an external act, right? Ooh. So you're going to buy the lingerie. You're setting it out. It's visual. It's exciting for you. It's fun to be playful. She gets a kick out of it. You guys have, you know, fun, playful, flirty sex, and then it's done.
Yeah. And it was go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Having a conversation about fantasies, about what turns you on, that's deep.
Well, yeah. And I think for a lot of guys going into that conversation, you're risking being told something that you think you're good at. There's something more that you can do, or a position that you think that your partner really likes may not actually be as good as you think it is for them. So it opens you up to hearing constructive criticism. It's vulnerability is what it is, which we as guys grow up hearing that word as a weakness, like the enemy is vulnerable. But being vulnerable in front of your wife or your partner or anyone who you care a lot about is actually the strongest thing you can do, because then you're not walking up there with your guard up. You're not prepared, you know, you're not prepared to defend yourself. You're there to have an honest conversation about something that's incredibly personal for both people. And so being able to admit that you may not know everything that your partner wants. And, you know, the fact that we all change so much, it's good to be able to admit that several times throughout your relationship.
And it's sexy as fuck.
Oh, yeah.
It is so hot.
That was my question, is that from a woman, like, does it really, because I think as a guy, you kind of look at it and go, you want to be good at it. You want to just you want to come out of the box and you want to know exactly what buttons to press, how hard to press.
Totally.
What sequence to press them in. And but there's, for me personally, like I'm not against being told exactly what to do, because I treat it like fourth grade. I just want to get a good grade.
Right. But that's the thing, is if the ultimate goal is to satisfy each other and to be connected, why would you not want to know what satisfies your partner and what makes them feel connected?
I just thought of this. I think it's because, and I hope I'm not, here's the thing. I'm trying to talk about myself, but at least keep it general, because I do think what I'm talking about is something that could apply to a lot, if not most, relationships out there.
Oh, 100%.
Okay, great. Good. Because I just didn't want to be like, hey, we were listening in to Justin talk about his sex life, only I could not relate at all. I think what it is that as a guy, and tell me what you guys think of this, is that I don't know if it's because it's easier for us to be into it. And I know that that's a blanket generalization, and that there are obviously examples of guys where it's not. But what I'm saying is that it seems like women, and I haven't been with a ton of women in my life, but I feel like all of the women I've been with intuitively were just better at sex than I was. Like, and I don't know if it's because as a guy, I just like sex and I like women. And so therefore it's just easier and it's basic. You know what I mean? Like we joke about how if you could feed a man through his heart, you take care of his stomach and you fuck him and your man is happy. Like maybe I'm just that much of a simpleton. Or if it's just, you know, biologically, they're naturally desirable, or, you know what I mean? Because it's hard for me as a guy to imagine my wife looking at me in the shower going, oh my God. Like, it's just not in the, it's not in the cards. And so because of that mindset, my step one is that I feel like I'm at a disadvantage in the love wrestling match I partake in.
Well,
what's funny is that your thought process there not only is understandable, that's exactly what women are thinking too.
You think so?
Like, exactly. I mean, if you're thinking that way about yourself in the shower, your partner is totally capable of doing the exact same thing.
Yeah. So that's a huge myth that I want to like debunk. And I think we've talked about this like briefly before, but you know, everyone go back and listen to every podcast episode that I've ever been on with Justin. we've talked about the like men need sex to feel love and women need love to have sex. Well, that's not always the case. So yes, is it a generalization of women lead with the emotional connection and then they can get physical, whereas most men lead with the visual and then comes the emotion? Mm-hmm. Yes, that is that's a generalization. And for the most part, it is true. Mm-hmm. But there is a caveat to that because women's hormones change all the time. So get this, Justin, we learned about this from a dear friend and nutritionist of ours that it has really shaped how I've been working with some women, some female clients that I have. So men, their hormones reset every 24 hours. So when you wake up every day, you wake up at the same place hormonally that you woke up the day before and the day before and the day before. It's like hitting a reset button every day. Ooh. You get to start from scratch every morning. A woman takes 28 days to go through that same cycle. So me waking up yesterday did not feel the same as me waking up today. And that's how it is for all women on a physiological level. So with that being said, it's really normal because sex drive is flourished and you know backed up with sex hormones. It really depends on where a woman is in her 28-day cycle for how she's going to be reacting sexually. So there are days in those 28 days where the woman who typically needs, you know, a lot of emotional stuff before sex is like, just fucking give it to me already. Like, stop the small talk. I don't want to kiss you.
Fuck me.
Yeah, exactly.
That is my new favorite like relationship quote and tip.
Wait, you sound off mic. What did you say?
I'm stealing your quote from earlier. Just, you know, feed them, fill their belly.
Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah.
New relationship quote by Justin.
But seriously, so there are days out of those 28 that she will be more like that stereotypical male because the testosterone is higher that day.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, I've experienced that. Yeah.
So that's where the communication comes in of like, what type of sex do you want to have? It's not just like, do you want to have sex? But there's so many different, like, do you want to be dominated? Do you want to dominate?
I think so much of this confusion around, well, so much of the confusion and then presumption around any form of sex, I think it really comes from the amount of resources we have, which are zero in most schools. And then you get to the wild world of pornography, where it's just a bunch of lies built on a smaller pile of lies.
No, yeah, I agree.
Because, you know, so much of porn is literally the exact same thing. A guy with a dick that's way too big and a girl who's not how regular people look.
And who has really long nails.
Always long nails. I never understood that.
Yeah.
And then in, like, the same five positions out of, like, the first five pages of, like, The Joy of Sex, dude, those five, whatever camera angles are the best, whatever positions are the best for the camera angle or what they do, which is not what normal people do in bed usually. If it's like blankets and you can't see everything and you don't get that weird close-up of everything you don't want to see. We have this huge problem with that where people are looking at that as one of their only sources of resources of how to have sex with their partner. So sitting down across from your partner is almost like admitting you don't know what to do, but that's often the truth is you need to admit like, hey, I want to make sure that do you want to have sex in that super uncomfortable position that we see on camera? Because that doesn't look fun. And I want to make sure that I'm pleasing you as best as possible because that's why we're in this relationship. That's what we're doing here.
I hope this doesn't exist somewhere out there, but you have given me an idea that I want to pitch to you guys to put under the umbrella of Right Wellness Center. In the in the tone of a Funny or Die, where they do like an honest recreation of movies and stuff like that, where they kind of poke holes in the absurdity of a film. Here's what I suggest that we write and produce is that an honest porno and we come at it from the teachings of the Right Wellness Center and say, if you are about to engage in coitus with a partner, these are the kinds of steps that you should take. Like, so let's say the pizza guy shows up or whatever. And he's like, you order extra sausage on your pizza. And they go, yes, I did. And then they pull him in. And then, you know, just as the, you know, the easy listening jazz bass starts playing, she goes, he stops and says, you know, before we do this, can we just, I hope you don't mind, but I would just like to sit down and have a conversation so I have a better understanding of like what you enjoy during sex. And then maybe I can share some of the things that I really enjoy. And then her go, oh my God, absolutely. That sounds amazing. And then they sit down and they have a conversation that, you know, where they're talking about what they like. Oh, I really like it when they do this. They go, oh, I've never done that. That sounds interesting, you know? And then they go, okay. And then they carry into sex.
I'm kind of obsessed with this idea.
I love that. That's a really good idea.
Right. And then you.
But all I'd see is that situation, you know, where pizza guy comes in. He's like, did you order extra sausage? And she's like, oh, no, I didn't. But now that
door
it's here,
shuts.
Then the reality where she's like, hold on, let me see what I ordered on the app. And he's like, the delivery company told me this. And then she's like, hold on. Well, I'm not going to pay for this because Postmates said they'd be here by a certain time. Yeah. And I didn't get what I ordered.
And he's like, so of course not. Of course not. And then in your idea, what happens is that through him being polite and go, yeah, this is crazy. We get to have them almost have like a rom-com type bonding moment.
Yeah, like
and
a then, meet cue.
Yeah, and then before he leaves, right, he kind of turns around and says, hey, I know this seems really weird and it's a weird way to meet somebody, but I think your hair is really cute, the way it falls across your forehead, and I've always been into girls with green eyes or whatever it is, right? And say, would you be willing to have like a coffee with me? And she goes, yeah, sure, great. And then we cut to them and they have a coffee and then then maybe they even get gray hair before they even ever have sex. Like they just built a relationship the normal way and to say this is what porn should be. That if it, because I do think so. I do think that if there was an element to pornography that we could have a fun way of kind of teaching people like these are ways we should be interacting with each other, and we do it with a tongue in our cheek. And then something else in our cheek in 20 minutes. I don't know.
You know, that reminds me of a Monty Python sketch. I forget which movie it's in. It's a long time ago. Well, obviously, it's a long time ago because Monty Python. But John Cleese is teaching sex ed, like in a university. And he brings his wife in and he has sex with his wife in front of his students, like showing them how to do it. Like puts her on the table and the students trying to write while he's like banging his wife on his table.
That's funny. That's
but it reminded
great.
Me of like how far away we intentionally keep ourselves from doing something that we are all the result of.
Yep. And I think a lot of people can enjoy and if here's the thing, and I know I'm using generalizations, Rachel, you're in my head already, but it's this idea that I feel like if we were more open about it, we would have a lot more people able to enjoy it, I think. I think that
yeah,
it
no,
would help.
I agree.
Absolutely.
It would help a lot with the insecurity for most people. It wouldn't obviously be 100% effective for everybody, right?
No, but I have to tell you, a lot of women that I work with, especially who come into our Ladies and Libidos program, have a lot of shame from childhood.
Wow.
It starts in childhood. Mm-hmm. Like I would say 90% of the women who I've worked with specifically around libido, if not higher, have more than one story of something that happened before they were 13 years old that dictated them not having a healthy sex life as an adult.
And I would argue, I would feel like on the guy side, tell me what you think of this too, Kyle, and obviously you too, Rachel, but it's that I think on the guy side, it's a little bit, it's from when I was young, but I would say that most of any kind of hang up I have comes from either that when I have moments of having a more stereotypical male like libido where I'm like, I just want to get down and dirty and do this, or that it's like I feel like I'm not manly enough because I'm okay with cuddling. Like I find that equally enjoyable and in moments that there is more of a spectrum to it than there is an either or.
Oh, absolutely. I think that that's something that we're really focusing on too, is that, you know, everybody has estrogen and testosterone in their body. We have the male and female hormones going all the time. Everybody does. Guys, women, we all do. And so it's always important to understand that those come and go. They ebb and they flow. You have more someday, you have less someday. And it dictates a lot of how you interact with the world. And what you said actually reminded me. The very first girl I ever slept with, we were dating and it's like a whole thing. And I remember she's a couple years older than me, but she asked me like 2 months into our relationship if like that she called it the rabbit phase. Like, do you think that's ever going to go away? And I always thought that was such an odd question to have at the
age. Wait, like
of
the vibrators?
No, like the fact
no,
you're
when
to you like rabbits.
Yeah,
oh,
like you do it like five times
like
a day.
The rabbit phase, like
yeah, where you're having sex like rabbits.
Yeah, I went straight to
rabbits
Sex in the City.
Have sex a lot.
Yes, like fuck like rabbits.
Yeah.
Or fuck like bunnies.
I've never watched a rabbit long enough to understand this metaphor, but I
don't know why you're uptight, Kyle.
Anyway,
for someone who grew up outside, I'm surprised you haven't seen bunnies just fucking everywhere.
I don't just watch nature have sex. That's not like,
why are you uptight? Let's unpack this. Why do you?
I'm like, hey, where are your bunnies at? Anyway, but in what was it? So she asked me like, hey, do you think that's ever gonna like end? And it almost sounded like that's what she was like looking forward to. And I was like, well, that seems like a really weird thing to say. But then there would be days when it would, like you said, like just cuddling in front of the TV or doing whatever, and there wouldn't be a lot of sexual energy. I remember acknowledging that that also felt really good. And I remember being relatively young and being like, well, we can have both. There's never, like, I don't want to have an either or. I thought it was kind of annoying that she, like, brought that up. Like, when do you think we're going to, like, not want to have sex all the time? I'm like, well, I don't know when that would be, but I'm not looking forward to that time. I think that there's a great, like, combination of these emotions we can have or these feelings we can have. I don't want to wonder if it's going to go away. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing to ask.
I could tell you, I'm sorry, am I interrupting you?
No, go ahead.
I could tell you as a guy who I think has been through that, in that where when Natalie and I were together, we had the rabbit face, and then we got older and we didn't have the rabbit face, but it was not a big deal. And I never had a moment's thought about the rabbit face until we had kids. And there was even a time when Jacob was still very, very young and a baby. And there were a couple times where we had sex and it was awesome. And we joked and laughed with each other about how, and they said when we had kids, it would stop, you know, kind of a thing. And then when we had Jack, when we added the second kid, like it took another hit, for lack of a better way of putting it. And I found myself looking back at those days, and it's interesting. I didn't love my wife less. I wasn't less attracted to her. I wouldn't even argue that, I couldn't know without a shadow of a doubt, but I wouldn't argue that she was less attracted to me or any, that the passion was gone. But you have, it's going back to that thing of this unfair expectation that slips into our own mind. Is that,
yeah,
for no reason should I say that should be the bar for which I have sex for all eternity, because why would you want to deal in absolutes? Like, by nature, there are no absolutes in relationships and in people. So let that go. And here's what I've learned then after that, and not really realizing until this conversation, is that the minute I let go of that past and stop trying to say, well, that's the standard. Remember my infamous statement where I said to my wife during probably one of our most difficult parenting moments, I said, what if when we go home, we have sex every day for a month? And she said, I can't even imagine. But after I went through that phase of like trying to get that back. And then the minute I let go of that past and just started focusing on the now and focusing on her, right? That's when I felt like things kind of opened up again. And
absolutely.
Maybe I'm not doing it 5 times a day because I'm a 39-year-old guy and I'm closer to a sniper than I am an infantryman, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. but I like to joke that I'm an elite sniper, you know, and I could hit that target from 50 yards away, whereas 19-year-old Justin needed buckshot in order to know what he was doing.
That's the funniest part.
I needed rapid fire because I wasn't. Any military guy or a gun guy will tell you, if you've got that rifle on auto, you're not hitting where you're aiming. It's just there's a lot of spray. There's a lot of crossover here in terms. But anyway, my point is that once I let go of that is where I started to feel, for lack of a better way of putting it, feel the same way I did then. And, right, and by feel, I mean security too. Yeah.
Well, I think that our brains kind of go back. I mean, I remember, you know, pre-sex, you know, you're thinking about like, well, I want to be really good at it. Like, you have no concept as to what good is. You're like, well, I want to make sure that we both enjoy it. I think that's my perception of good at the time, like what good in bed is like. But I feel like I remember kind of wondering like why we're so caught up early on. Like we think that we have this expectation as kids to be like, we want to go be awesome at sex. We don't really know what that means, but we know we want it. We have the idea of making sure that our partners are happy. And I think once, you know, we all started having sex, you got like a better understanding of like what was good overall, what was bad overall, like how to, you know, what's the like blanket way of having sex. The benefit of being in a relationship is being able to kind of narrow down on that and be able to share with each other, hey, I like this. Hey, I like that. Hey, this frequency is something that I want versus not. Like being able to open up that door and have that conversation is super, super important.
Yeah, because imagine trying to organize a meal plan for a week and buy groceries with a total stranger. That's right. Next to impossible. So the benefit of, and I think why we, some of us, are predisposed to preferring a relationship is that you like the idea of travel. I could tell me definitely, I almost need it. But the idea of traveling through life with someone else to share this experience with.
Yeah.
And there are many, many perks that come with that. And if anything, I think that one of your endeavors at RightWellnessCenter.com is to add to that level of comfort. Like, you know, the ability that, sure, yes, we leave the door open and we go to the bathroom, right? And you could see that as a negative level of comfort. But what if you can offset that by saying, I could feel so comfortable with this person that I could say, here's what I really like when you do this. And I'm not so into that, but I am okay with it if it's something that you really like to do from time to time, or that's completely off the table for me, and that you can operate with that level of efficiency even within your sex life and your relationship.
100%. And I love what you said before about dropping the expectation, because whether everybody listening, like, please, if you take away one thing, everyone, every single person, including myself, is carrying around expectations for ourselves and our partner and our relationship.
Yeah.
No matter what you say or how much therapy you've been to, I've been to all the therapy. I do the therapy. I've been to therapy.
Raise your hand, right?
I'm like doing my like preach it hands in the
air. I've been to all the therapy. I like that. I want to see a meme at Right Well Center of just you and your hands in the air going, I've been to all the therapy.
Seriously. And there are still expectations that I go to Kyle and say, hey, I feel like I'm not doing enough of this. Am I off? And like most of the time he's like, I would have told you if I needed more of that.
Well, let's even look at by the nature of the business you guys are building together, where it's about cultivating a relationship. You want to talk about an expectation. I mean, you guys have to have an unimaginable level of expectation on yourselves just because it's your passion. It's your life. You know, and it must be really hard to let go of that.
100%.
I think that's funny you're talking about expectations and thinking about like outside perception versus what's internal.
Oh, this is great.
This is what reminds me. So whenever, as we're talking about this, I thought back to like, okay, that first time, you know, I ever had sex. If I allowed, or if anyone allows outside perception or your shoulds to get involved in the bedroom with you and your partner, it's like sitting there and trying to have sex with your partner while all the people who you think you need to live up to are standing there with their arms folded watching you. Yeah. It's like that episode of How I Met Your Mother where Lily and Marshall are trying to get pregnant. All they can do is imagine each other's parents sitting there being like, so how are you going to do it? Are you going to do it the way I told you to do it? Like, you can get your wife pregnant that way.
Ugh.
But it's the same thing. If people are so caught up in what someone outside of that bed will think about what they're doing in that bed
or couch or table
or floor or in public, or when then you might actually get someone standing over you.
Yeah,
arms,
that's true. Good point.
I mean, if that's your thing, go for it. The police look down on that though.
Police are uptight, man.
I want to talk about uptight. Like I'm talking about bunny sex. Cops will shut it down right away if they see it.
Can't do that in public, little buddy.
But when you get caught up in perception of expectations and what the shoulds of, man, I hope I'm really good in bed or I want to be able to, you know, please my partner. You're allowing literally someone standing over you being like, are you doing it okay? Are you doing it okay? And it's impossible to perform in any aspect in that environment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I find that, and that's one of the things I want to talk to, is that I like the idea of, and I think a lot of guys do, is that I like the idea of being told exactly what to do. Like, I think there's an element to that. And I don't know if women are concerned about that. Like, if they feel like
they don't know you want that.
That's interesting. But I feel like, don't you?
They have no fucking clue that you want that, because society says that when you tell a guy to do something, it's emasculating.
Oh, that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Yeah. So if you're in bed together, wherever, on the whatever, and she's like, hey, a little to the left, or, you know, down a little, or, hey, can you come back up and kiss my neck? There's this narrative for some women that go on in the back of their head is, am I being controlling? Am I emasculating him? Mm-hmm. I don't want to make him feel like less of a man. I have heard that from numerous women.
Well, that, and I could see, like, here's the thing. I think, like anything, there's a spectrum for everybody. That's what I've learned, right? And so I think that there is a point where that would probably be not okay. And if I fall into that category, then I would pose this question to you guys to see what your take is on it, is to say, well, what is it too much to have a predetermined time where it's like, okay, I'm cool, I'm in a good enough headspace, and that if during this session, if you want to, you know, give me all the pointers, hit me with everything, and then give me two more times where I can see, I could do my own thing and make some shots in the dark and see if I find something that you like or whatever, right? And then we could go back and revisit. Is that...
Yeah, totally.
Is that a healthy way to approach
having,
it, maybe?
It's making sure that you're both on the same page, right? So, like, if you want it to be a more exploratory session,
yep.
Then going in with, okay, we're going to try this and we're going to give each other feedback on it and have that be the setup expectation so that it doesn't come out of nowhere. And, you know, if you're in a relationship or partnership where you have never told your partner feedback before, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you're like, you're, I don't like
the
this.
Floodgates,
no,
yeah.
Flip me over. No, I want that. It's like, oh my God, have I been doing it like horribly this whole time?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one thing if it's built up. If it's not built up, there's zero reason why you can't say one or two or three things during, you know, a session. And that's the thing is, like, and I remind women of this all the time, is your partner doesn't want to hurt you. Your partner doesn't want to make you feel physically uncomfortable. So if something is uncomfortable for you, they will not know.
Right.
Literally, their penis is inside of you and they are very happy. They do not know that it's pushing on your bladder. They don't know that your thigh muscles cramping unless you say something.
I didn't even know that was possible. I don't know. I don't. Maybe I'm not well endowed enough. I don't. I'm not making a joke or a self-deprecating. I'm proving your point by being another dude who reads books about this stuff and talks to people about this stuff. And you just told me something. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like I didn't. Well, I've never.
Exactly.
That's never even entered my mind,
Justin. It's like the exact same thing. So I want to. I like to flip this around for guys because it can obviously, like Rachel said, it can feel really emasculating to be like, oh, don't put that there or rub that slower or whatever. But it's the same, that conversation, that bit of information needs to be treated the exact same way that if you're receiving a blowjob and there's a little bit too much teeth and you say, hey, like a little less teeth or anything like that. It's the same idea. You're just helping each other out, go about something that is really, really like a passionate, really enjoyable experience. And all you're trying to do is provide a little bit of information to make sure the experience is better for both of you. Because I guarantee you, you don't want to be doing something that your partner doesn't enjoy. And you want to make sure they're enjoying it to the fullest potential. So if they can help you out with that information, that's a plus on your side. That's not a minus.
And that's my second big takeaway from this talk with you guys today is that I would imagine that if I'm a woman who's doing this thing, right? Especially when society says that no matter what, guys just, you short of taking an angle grinder to the head of their penis, guys are into it, right? But you're doing something to them that hurts them or makes them feel uncomfortable, then that means that you're a sexual angle grinder all of a sudden, you know, like it's,
right.
You have no skills it's supposed to be super easy, lady. Like how hard could this be?
Right. But people are different. So like what works for one guy isn't going to work for the next. Their penises are different sizes.
Well, and the fact of the matter is I spent I'm not going to worry about it. I spent the majority of my marriage feeling like I'm not into that at all. Right. Because I had had experiences prior and it just wasn't my thing. And it's not a thing that I necessarily crave. Right. Or anything.
Are you talking about receiving a blowjob?
Correct. Sorry. I'm sorry. I was unintentionally being vague. But it's
that subconsciously
can't be vague.
I think
Rachel.
So. Right. Yeah, exactly. That's there's your second meme with her hands in the air. But no, it's, and what I've learned is that I do, I obviously I like it or whatever. And I don't know why it's even embarrassing for me to say that. It's pretty common knowledge. I would imagine that you can infer, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that before because of previous experiences. And one could argue that if I, and I didn't think of this till now, but I bet that if for whatever reason I started giving notes or whatever, I could imagine why it would kind of make Natalie concerned or self-conscious about it in some way, shape, or form, because that's if we flip the script, like what Kyle is saying, is that if we look at it for the same example that I look at myself being flawed because women seem to me to be such natural sexual beings, right? Well, then if I'm saying something back to her going, well, that I'm not into that or whatever. Well, just because she's a woman, she should naturally intuit how to please a guy without even having to put forth effort in any way, shape or form. Right.
Right.
And so that would naturally. So it's the same thing. We're both having the same sting for the exact same purpose without even really. We don't know that we're always looking in the mirror.
100%. And Justin, to your point, you know, a lot of women I talk to don't like receiving oral sex.
Wow.
And it's something
I really hope that's not Natalie after I read that book.
Oh, my gosh.
I may need you to text her for me. Can we get back to junior high and can you text my wife?
We'll have to do a double date.
Yeah, exactly. Then you guys go to the bathroom and just do some recon for me, okay? Yeah, yeah. that's funny. All right, let's take a quick break. And I think it still falls into the same tone, but let's talk more about what does it mean to be a masculine man today with our good friend Kyle Wright after this. I love this topic, and I think it's because for me, subconsciously, it feels very self-serving. I feel like I'm going to get a gigantic series of pats on the back from Kyle. And my experience with the Wrights, though, is that I'm going to go into it with that expectation, and there's a very strong chance I'm going to be surprised and pushed off balance is what's about to happen. But I've always been, and I've always wrestled with this concept as a husband, as a dad, and I'm going to even go back to even as a kid. I always felt more connected to girls when I had friends. Guys always seem to be like, they like to make fun of each other or kind of pick on each other, and that just wasn't my thing. And even after saying that out loud, like, you have the stereotype of the girls being catty and talking about each other behind each other's back. And I've definitely been a part of many of those conversations in my childhood and adulthood. But they just seem more at home to me for some reason. And I don't know why that is. And I've always, it's the other part of this that I like, and I'm curious to see what you have learned and what your take is on this, is that as a stay-at-home dad who is, you know, obviously the trend is growing, but I hang around a lot of moms, and I've recently learned in my life, and my wife felt the same way, is that we switched roles. When I was doing stand-up, she was I was home with the kids a lot and taking care of them when they were babies, and it was very easy for me, and I liked managing the household. But I also was like, there were moments where I envied her being able to go out and interact with adults. And then within the last 6 or 8 months, we've switched, and now I work a more 9-to-6 schedule, and she's been home with the kids, still working from home, which makes it, I think, a little bit more difficult. And not just in general. I mean, for her, I'm not saying that, you know, if just because you're a stay-at-home mom doesn't mean you're really working. I will never believe that. But my point is, she's actually said, through me talking about making this career shift that I'm about to do again, is that she said, you know, I don't think I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. And I think that's really rough in today's world for a mom to feel that and find be okay with it. That there still is that stigma and expectation that why do you not love your kids? Which is couldn't be further from what she's saying. What she's saying, I think, is exactly what my dad said. I thought my dad would consider me to be an emasculated man because I changed diapers. I went to the library for storybook time. And to be honest, I loved every minute of it. Even when I was hating it, I know deep down in my soul, I felt fulfilled and I loved it, right? And my dad said, you can play to your strengths. just yesterday, I made dinner for everybody after being gone doing some work stuff. And I came in and I called Natalie. I said, hey, I know I'm running late, but I will get dinner ready or whatever. And I threw together this dinner in an hour. And she kind of, you know, quietly came over to me and she said, see, I could never do this. And I said, what do you mean? You did this all the time and it's delicious. And it goes back to, I think, the expectation and security thing we were talking about earlier. But in her mind, she goes, I couldn't have made a meal this is as good as this. And there's a part of it that made me feel good about that. That made me feel like I contributed to the relationship and that she valued me. But then there was another part of it that I realized that I'm like, well, no, that's you're wrestling with an insecurity there that I don't know that I can remove it just by validating you. But I could tell you I've had many a meal that you've cooked and they are delicious. They are very, very good. And I enjoyed every single one of them that you do know how to season meat like she thinks that she can't do. So point in bringing all of this up is that are you seeing, Kyle, is this why you want to talk about it? Is masculinity being redefined today? And well, is it getting more feminine in nature, or is that not even a truth either?
I think that it needs to be talked about more. I think that we're sitting here at a state of kind of real confusion coming from, and now obviously I don't want to speak for all of the guys in the world because I'm not them. But I think from the most part, I think that guys nowadays are finding less and less familiar footing to stand on. And as equality movements are finally taking hold, things like that, I feel like, and from my little bit of research that I've been doing and from my perception, that especially in our generation, you and me, Justin, is that we were sold this what a man is from like the 1950s.
Yeah,
you go, you get a college degree or you go off and serve your country and you come home and you make a sustainable living wage for everybody in your family. Your wife stays home and cooks. And then you have like 1.5 or 2.5 kids or 2¾, whatever the nuclear family percentage is.
I think you're right at 2.5.
Like 2.5. That's why Maggie never grows up on The Simpsons, because it has to be 2.5 for the nuclear family thing to be a thing. So we're in this world where finally, and even only partially, women are actually getting their fair shake at existing as an equal to men, which is insane that it's taken this long, but it's putting guys who are refusing to or unable to or are never given the tools to move forward with their understanding of the world, and especially what we were talking about earlier with roles changing. In the entrepreneurial space that we're in, it's a really common theme that men are feeling uncomfortable with the fact that the relationship dynamic has changed, where a lot of women are hiring their husbands out of their old jobs. That's like the phrase being used, is they retire their husband from their old job and bring them into the company that the woman's created. That's a really, really common thing nowadays. And our society hasn't caught up to that in the way that, like, giving men the feeling of value around their what they do, like to the home or to with their partner or whatever else. There hasn't been a replacement for the 1950s style of like, that's what a man is. There's no modern like, oh, this is a 2018 man nowadays. That hasn't been updated for the majority of our culture, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And yeah. I think that even we like to think of ourselves as very progressive, but and maybe I wouldn't necessarily say that I would describe myself as feeling judged at every turn. I've made jokes about, moms going, oh, that's the stay at home dad. And that's not the case. I mean, I've actually recently had conversations with my mom friends where they would say that. And one of my mom friends literally said, when I was talking about making this career shift, she said, well, you rocked it as a stay at home dad, which is not something I ever heard and ever perceived myself as being that. I didn't mean to put that out. But and I think there's a level of shame to that. You know what I mean? That even though I'm rocking it, am I rocking it as a man who's the guy who's taking care of the house? Like, am I deep down inside OK with that, to where I don't have to wrestle or kind of realign my brain to go, no, that's OK? Because I had something very similar to this, which I think connects back to the other topic, too, where, where you talk is that I. Natalie's best friend from high school wanted to come down and spend the weekend with it, right? And so I said, I'll tell you what, I got some Southwest points. She's like, no, I'll pay for the flight. I go, okay, you pay for the flight, and then I'll give you guys like a girl's weekend, because Natalie never does this. So I booked a weekend at a resort for them down in San Diego. I got them a couple's massage, and I made dinner reservations because it was a Saturday night. And I wanted as many of the details to be figured out so they could just go and relax and drink and be girls and have fun and laugh and play around, and they did. Everything was great. But the thing that shocked me about this is that I didn't tell anybody that I was doing this, and not just because of the surprise, but because kind of the shame that I had about it, which seems counterintuitive. But I feel like I'm either A, I'm acting like I figured something out that other guys don't, or B, that I'm puffing up my chest and being a douche and go, you know, which I think is the same as A. But C is that a regular guy wouldn't think to do this. If I was a real man, this kind of stuff wouldn't make me feel as happy and as good about my relationship with my wife.
Interesting. Because one of my biggest points with so I'm doing a men's coaching program called Modern Masculinity, because it needs to be, well, as we're talking now, updated. A lot of what we're told growing up, and I think this is kind of to your point, is it's what we do that defines us as men.
Yeah.
Like, you can drink. I remember someone once told me, it always blew my mind, that it was like the toughest thing they'd seen, that I drink black coffee. This guy is like huge, roided out fucking ex-military guy. Yeah, and he's like, wait, you're just drinking black coffee? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, damn. Like, that's just, I couldn't do that. And I'm like, what? Like, that would just tear me up. It's too, like, I'm just not tough enough. And I'm like, what the fuck are you saying? All right, whatever.
Well, and what the fuck does coffee preference have to do with your gender expression?
Everything.
It's the same thing. Everything. As you perceive somebody drinking a pink cocktail and whiskey neat, you perceive that person differently based on their choices.
Oh, right. No, I understand it culturally. Oh, yeah, no, I'm just insane. Saying, like, it's fucking ridiculous.
Oh,
right.
No, it's absolutely insane. But I think that one of the biggest points that I'm working towards and working with now is that forever, men have been defined for what they do, right? They chop firewood, climb a mountain, build a house, make awesome sex with their partner, whatever. Do awesome sex, make awesome sex.
That I like both. Sentence. I like both.
Yeah. Do awesome sex.
That's your meme. That's your meme with your hands in the air, as I make awesome sex with my partner. Awesome.
He's literally raising his hands.
But no one's ever really asked, I think, the majority of men, what makes them feel like a man. Ooh. And that was a big challenge for me early on when I left restaurants and I was going to be more or less, for lack of a better term, Rachel's secretary when she had a private practice. I was going to answer all of her emails, do her bookkeeping, do her scheduling. I was going to do all of that when I left restaurants. And I went from working in one of the best bars in San Francisco, you know, do my thing, to being more or less, you know, a stay-at-home fiance, I think it was at the time.
You were a hot secretary that banged the boss, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much. I was working my way up the ladder that way. but when I struggled with that a lot early on, and I was like, well, what do I, you know, I'm looking for definition of who I am now. And it was only by kind of taking pride in what I was able to do as, you know, who I am, the man that I am. Like, yeah, I'm going to make the shit out of the laundry. I'm going to rock dinner. I'm going to do, I would phrase it in kind of my own way, because take the 30,000 foot view. I mean, sure, that's, I'm filling in the role of what a stay at home, you know, traditionally, and the phrase even rolls off my tongue way too easily, and I think it's super misogynistic, stay at home mom role of taking care of the household while my, you know, girlfriend at the time, now then fiance, then wife, goes off and makes the money for both of us.
Well, and here's the thing, as I wrestled with this too, and when I was by myself doing it and it was just me and the kids, never really had a problem with it. But when you brought Natalie back into the picture and she would come back into the house, or I was out about doing these kinds of things, it always crept into my mind where there was a secret fear that I had, that what if Natalie was at work going, you know, I could be home with the kids, but because I have a loser husband who can't have a job to pay the bills or any of that stuff, even though I was contributing financially. But in the beginning, I wasn't helping. I mean, we leaned on her income a lot. But you can't. I always wrestled with this idea that even though there has been about a 4 to 7 year cycle as far as who is the quote unquote breadwinner in our family, I wonder if Natalie wrestles, and I'm saying this wonder as in the fact that I'm wondering, I think, is part of the point that we're talking about. But I wonder if Natalie wrestled with, I'm not the breadwinner as much as I did. You know what I mean? Like, does the opposite sex worry just as much? And if she doesn't worry, does she think of me as being less of a man because I'm not a breadwinner?
Well, I think that too depends on, I think it depends on how we're raised.
Right.
Like, so, you know, the time we grew up, how we were raised. For me, you know, when when Kyle first left restaurants, and he's right. I mean, he was basically going to be my assistant. At the time, I had a thriving private practice in a physical location. I was not remote in any way, shape, or form. And I was constantly in session. I mean, I was working, and this is anybody listening who is a therapist is going to be like, holy, what are you talking about? I would see like 8 or 9 clients a day,
damn,
which is crazy.
Yeah. Like,
crazy. I mean, most therapists, like, put it this way, most companies, when you work as a therapist in an association, it counts double hours. So like one session is 2 hours, because with the notes that you have to do and
so
like the emotional toll, it's just, yeah. So I was doing 8 to 9 clients a day, and I was working Saturdays. So it was like, it was insane. So I remember first telling people, you know, oh, Kyle's going to leave, you know, the restaurant. And now, of course, looking back, we can now see how all the dots are connected to us starting Right Wellness Center. And we wouldn't have been able to do that or even really have the idea if Kyle hadn't done this. But at the very beginning, it was like the questions I got asked were, well, what is he going to do to contribute?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, all of the things that if I stay home to do, I can't go see my clients.
And if the roles were reversed, even in today's
quote, would have asked that.
Nobody would ever. And if I'm talking to Kyle and I say, well, what's Rachel going to do to contribute? People laughing like, why are you being a dick?
Right.
Right.
Right. And not only that.
You sexist motherfucker.
Seriously.
I mean, really, there's a vitriolic anger that comes if you make that comment about a woman who's a homemaker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And the people who knew me, like who knew me really well and knew Kyle, they didn't ask those questions because I have always been the person who wants to, even when we do have kids, I want to work. Like I was always that type of person, regardless of gender. Mm-hmm. So it was not like this crazy surprising thing that like I wanted to keep working. And at the time, I mean, my earning potential in quotes, I hate that phrase, but my earning potential was higher than Kyle's in that moment. And so it made a lot more sense for him to also, he's much better at cooking. He gets joy out of cooking.
Yes, he plays to his strengths.
Right.
Right.
Like exactly. I'm okay at it, but it's not great and I don't enjoy it. So why would I not have somebody who enjoys it and makes awesome fucking food do it?
But to get back to what we were talking about earlier and take it out of the part of the triangle that is sex and move it over into both relationships and mental health, I think is what I'm seeing, feeling here is that if you feel comfortable enough or even have the presence of mind to vocalize that to him, and he can be in a good enough state of mind to be able to really receive that and find comfort in the fact that you're like, no, this is what you're good at. You're going to crush this. And I super appreciate it. And I'm way into it because I think to a great extent, that's really what we all kind of want out of a relationship. Mm-hmm. We want the other person to value us and appreciate us. Right. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair way to put it?
100%.
So if you're doing that, then it works and then it makes sense. And if I would have been better when I was wrestling with this before, because we're actually in that exact same spot right now. Natalie recently shifted jobs where her potential earnings are way better than what I could get working at the radio station. In fact, I'm wrestling with it because I think I'm losing money for our family by working at the radio station. And Natalie and I had a conversation where it was like, I said, I think I got to leave. I think I got to leave and I got to come home and I got to take care of the house and find some other way to generate income, but to free you up so you can focus your energy on your job and mm-hmm. I will take care of the kids because that's what makes sense for the two of us. And that is why you get in a relationship so you can work together to better both of your lives.
Oh, absolutely. Justin, the way I like to see it is that so when it comes to, you know, the definition of what, you know, being manly is or masculine things to do, I have done almost all of the, in quotes, like manly actions. I have climbed mountains. I've chopped down trees. I can make fire from scratch. I love drinking whiskey by like whatever bullshit, like archetype of masculinity out there. I've done most of them. But the time where I felt, even though in the moment it may not feel like this, but looking back and being able to observe, because we can't. Obviously, you can't look forward and like put out things, you know, how things are going to work out together. You can only do that by looking back. Looking back, the times when I was the most strong as a man was being able to cry in front of Rachel and share my emotions and just tell her, like, I'm miserable at my job that I'm supposed to be the best at. I'm supposed to be one of the best in the city, and I'm miserable, and I don't have direction, and I hate what I'm doing. Being able to share my weaknesses with her is the strongest thing that I've ever done. It's way more manly than anything else I've ever done.
And you can honestly say, Rachel, that hearing that, being in your partnership, like, you don't look at him and go, oh, this weak son of a bitch.
Are you kidding me? I was so much more sexually attracted, not only physically, but on an emotional level, because it's human.
Yeah.
It's to have this exterior of like, ooh, nothing fucking bothers me. Things are simple. You're the one with all the emotions. Like, no, you feel them too.
In this conversation, I'm listening to you say this. That's why I'm chuckling and going, I literally had the thought of go, oh God, I wish I could be that way. Oh, I'm an idiot.
Oh, you're so funny. You're so funny. It really, I mean, I remember the first time I saw Kyle cry in front of me. It opened up the door for me to also be vulnerable.
Yes. Yeah.
And
it works on that triangle. It helps.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is like, there are so many assumptions that people make, you know. In fact, just the other day, a couple of my clients were telling me like, oh, you and Kyle have like the perfect relationship. And I was like, God,
people think that. Oh, it's hilarious.
I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, I mean, you know, your pictures on Instagram and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you guys, no. We work our asses off to have a relationship that we really, truly enjoy. Does that mean we don't fight? No. But it means that when we do, it brings us closer and not further apart.
It's cliche, but you can't have the good times without the bad.
You need the bad times
for the good times to feel as good as they do.
Well, and the biggest reminder is that the good times that people do see on social media, that's when I remember to take a picture.
Right. That you don't have the presence of mind to.
Exactly. That doesn't mean that we're having a perfect day or a great day or whatever.
Because what helps a marital fight is if you snap a selfie with her when she's got her angry face.
I feel like that won't help the fight. However,
I think you're wrong. I think you're uptight.
Well, and you know what's funny, Justin, is we've actually gone into, so we have a free Facebook group, which is over 600 people now. It's just an incredible
space. Oh, that's
awesome.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. And we'll come in and literally, like, we have had fights and we will hop on and do a Facebook Live to talk about what we just fought about and how we got through it.
Wow. Good for you guys. When I say that, I'm not trying to be like, you know, Tyra Banks in a fat suit and saying, oh, it's so brave. I really don't believe that, because I do believe it takes a lot of bravery to be able to just kind of say, this is my bullshit that I'm wrestling with. And especially in your guys' realm, where to wrestle with the idea of like, well, what if this means we don't have any credibility to help people with this, which is completely opposite of your message, right?
100%. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is that our credibility is not just in my degrees,
right?
Because a lot of people have those.
Yep.
Our credibility is that we're living, breathing examples of, you know, when Kyle and I first met, we fucking hated each other. Like, just hated each other. We were like the extreme versions of like some of the most neurotic parts of ourselves.
Yeah, didn't you? You guys posted that as a quiz or something on Instagram, I think fairly recently. Of like, which of these three facts? And I remember taking the quiz in my mind, and I was like, I go, I'm pretty sure they didn't like each other, is what I remember. So.
Yeah, good memory. Yeah, we did. We like truly disliked, and like, this is something that like everybody who was around us at the time knew.
Yeah.
Like, we openly disliked each other. Well, it was not like a quiet disdain.
Right.
By bringing your fights to, say, Facebook Live, to, especially because it is the nature of your business, I think for the same reason of being vulnerable with your partner, by you guys being vulnerable with your clientele, for lack of a better way of putting it, it really it helps to reinforce the message and the connection. And I could tell you that the people that have found this podcast and enjoy it, one of the reasons that they all kind of say in unison is that I don't talk about parenting as if like it's all great and awesome and fantastic, that I could say that a good chunk of it, and I could say like 80% of it sucks ass. But there's a wiring that certain people can hate that 80%, but still would do it. They still get up the next day and are glad that they made the choices and did it that way with no regret and can laugh it off. And that's the message that I'm trying to put out there, is that let's just make fun of ourselves for doing this stupid thing that we did that we really, really like, that causes us a lot of gray hair and pain and frustration and money.
Exactly. And that nothing's perfect. Yeah. And that while there are the tools out there, it takes, it's a muscle to remember to use them.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And even like the most basic concepts, which seem foreign and extreme and like, oh my God, what are you talking about, are so helpful and necessary. For example, one of the great ways to kind of lose a lot of the perceptions of masculinity is just to talk to other guys. If you're a guy and you're kind of worried or think that you're worried or feel some oddity about where you stand on like whatever fake masculinity scale there is, just having conversations with other guys is so helpful. Being able to open up and say, hey, I'm thinking this, I'm feeling this, these are my struggles, are so helpful and important to do. And it just doesn't get done.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because to go back to that very first conversation, I threw it out there because I thought it would be a comedic moment when I had my dad on the podcast. And I said, how do you feel about having your son be a stay at home dad? And I know when my dad's blowing sunshine up my ass, like, and he, trust me, he doesn't do it a lot. But and it's one of the things I've always loved about him and appreciated. But my point is, because of moments like this, is that when he says something like this, for me, it has more meaning. Is that when he said that, well, you get to play your strengths, and I envy it. I was shocked and at the same time touched. And it kind of, that was for me, the first step towards finding more comfort in not being a stereotypical guy who works 9 to 6. And the nice part about it is that, you know, even after having this conversation with you, I'm sure I'll still wrestle with it. But as more of these conversations come about, like right now, it looks like I'm going right back to that life, and I'm very excited about it. I love going to the grocery store. I love doing laundry. I like all of that. I love finding a way to work for a couple hours to make a few ducats and be entrepreneurial way more than I like a 9 to 6 situation. And that doesn't mean that in any way, shape, or form that I think I'm better than somebody who isn't. And I think that's kind of the core of what we're talking about, is that just because I'm not that guy who can go crush it at 9 to 6 and pull in a 6-figure income doesn't mean I'm less of a man. And it also, because I'm a guy who knows how to change a diaper lickety split and understands what to give a baby if they're constipated, does not also make me a better man either. It just makes me a different dude with a different skill set and strength. And that in reality, that if I can learn something from the guy who could go out and kill it as a breadwinner, maybe he's entrepreneurial or something like that, and everybody could work together. It's just now I'm getting really kumbaya-ish, but we all work together and kind of everybody can better their lives just through shared experiences and kombucha.
No, but you're spot on, Justin, because, you know, we like to call it your zone of genius, right? And we all have different superpowers. We all have different zones of geniuses. You know, we wouldn't ask, like, you wouldn't ask Spider-Man to, like, come fix your car.
True.
You'd ask your mechanic. But Spider-Man's the superhero.
Right.
Right. It doesn't make the mechanic any less of a superhero because he's not from Marvel. Like, he just fixed your car. For me, who knows nothing about how to fix a car, that's a fucking hero.
Right.
I don't care if you can, you know, spit web out of your wrist thing. Like,
that's great. Web wrist thing.
I'm not even going to say anything about that.
I'm pretty sure Kyle just emasculated you, Rachel. I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit. It's okay. His face is like dying laughing. So.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's funny. You guys are the best. Do me a favor. Everybody should go to rightwellnesscenter.com. They do webinars. Do you have any webinars that are coming up soon?
Yeah, we do. We're teaching a masterclass on the 30th of this month, actually, on how to talk about money in your relationship, because that's a huge issue for a lot of people. I mean, what is it, Rachel? It's like
one of the top three factors of divorce.
I believe it.
So we really, you know, people need to understand how to talk about money. And it's the same thing as being able to be a good lover to your partner, is externalizing the thing that you're thinking about from what you're actually doing is a huge part of that. But we're teaching that on the 30th.
And then on June 13th and 14th, we're doing a free. So our monthly masterclasses are $17. You get lifetime access and you get to attend live with downloadable slides, the workbook, the whole thing.
And we get to interact with you. It's super fun.
It's really fun. And then in June, we're actually doing a special free webinar. And that is how to have a conversation about anything in your relationship. And we have literally broken down every tool from every researcher and all of our work with clients into this jam-packed hour webinar. So both are coming up. We're super excited about both. And come join us in our Facebook group.
If you go to rightwellnesscenter.com, and that's W-R-I-G-H-T for right, rightwellnesscenter.com, and the link is in the description of this episode, and you scroll down to the bottom of their homepage, you could type your name, your address, and send them a question right there, right on the spot. And it looks like all you have to do is do some basic arithmetic to prove you're not a bot. And then you're
That's
good.
That's it. And we tried to pick the basic math that didn't even have any like subtractions in it.
That's good. Yeah. That's a good move.
Because those get confusing.
I don't know if it's random, but mine right now is 6 + 8. So I think
there
I can
you
figure
go.
That
See?
Out. Yeah. So check that out. And then what about the Facebook group you were saying?
So our Facebook group, like we were talking about earlier, it's the best. I call it our cozy, non-judgmental corner of Facebook because everyone in there is so giving, so loving. We do everything from like, we'll go in and start discussions to everyone who's in there is encouraged to start discussion.
And they
so
do.
Yeah, we've had people leave their jobs through the coaching of like the whole group talking about everybody coming together and really using their strengths. That's what this whole group is about. It's really creating a place to have discussions about these things that maybe you don't have another place to go and ask. And this is a network of people literally all over the world who just want to be and grow and learn. And it's my favorite place to be on Facebook.
And what I'm realizing is that you guys have done is that you have taken the superpower of the internet being anonymity to a certain extent. And you've spun it around to actually be a force for good in that I imagine that if I'm a guy who's struggling with my career, that I don't want to say that to my friends for fear that what if I work with them? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But here's a group of people where the understanding is that we're all going to be supportive and honest and kind of shoot straight but in a kind way. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I could get real honest feedback from somebody who doesn't have an emotional investment. And get some encouragement possibly or learn something from them without the consequence of realizing that now that person knows I'm unhappy in my job and I have to go pass by them every day, even though maybe I changed my mind.
Exactly. And to speak to that too, there was somebody in the group who posted, you know, I just got this job interview for this job I really want. I'm really nervous about the interview part, you know, any help, blah, blah, blah. So like, of course I chime in with like mindset and communication because that's my, you know, area of expertise. And then someone who I have not met one-on-one who's in our community pops in and was like, oh, I'm a career coach. Do you want to hop on a call? I'm happy to coach you, complimentary just through an interview.
That's great.
And that's we were awesome. Like, oh my God, the group is working. Like, yeah. This is what we wanted. And it is like, it's exactly what we wanted. And so now we've started about once or twice a week. We start this thread called, what do you need help with right now? Really trying to encourage people to ask for help, because I know for me personally and for Kyle too, it's been an area that's really hard. You know, it's hard to ask for help. And so we're trying to create a space where it is more the norm than not.
Awesome. And if you go to rightwellnesscenter.com, there's a Facebook link that'll take you right to that group, right? That's
yep,
the one I'm
it says
right
community
now.
Up at the top.
Yeah.
And you just click that and it takes you right in.
Guys, again, I know I say this every time, and I'm sorry if it accidentally sounds cliche or insincere, but good for you for everything that you guys are doing. I couldn't be happier for you and your success, and it's well deserved. And I'm glad that all your hard work is paying off, and tons of kudos. Also, by the way, don't forget you can also check out their podcast. There's a podcast tab right at the top at rightwellnesscenter.com, and you can listen to that show. They have tons of cool interviews on there all the time, and I think that's it. Yeah, anything else, guys?
No.
Nailed it.
Just love you, man.
Pleasure being back on here.
Ah, it's fun. We'll do it again in a month and appreciate the hell out of you guys. So on behalf of Kyle and Rachel Wright of WrightWellnessCenter.com, this is Justin Warsham saying hug your kids, hump your loved one, and stay frosty, my friends.